Most dentists are eventually going to become practice owners. It's just so much more profitable. You have so much more control over your career when you own your own business. But before becoming a practice owner, there are some risks you should take into account. So today I want to talk about the 7 biggest risks of dental practice ownership. All of these risks can either be avoided or at least mitigated if you follow the right strategies. My name is Chris. I'm a dentist. I've been a practice owner myself, and I now help dentists evaluate and purchase dental practices. So risk number 1, the upfront cost. If you are a dentist, that means you went to dental school, which means you are not a newcomer to upfront costs. Going to dental school obviously is a huge upfront cost. And so you come out of school, you have $300,000, $400,000, sometimes $600,000 in student loans. And now you're faced with the decision. Are you going to take out additional debt to either buy or start a practice? Most practices are going to sell for at least $500,000, sometimes up to $1 million or more. If you're going to do a startup, you're probably going to spend just as much, maybe even more, depending on how much you have to spend on marketing. So it can be expensive to become a practice owner. You're probably going to need to hire some advisors. You're probably going to have to spend some money on a lawyer, on an accountant. Like, there are multiple expenses that come with buying a dental practice. For most dentists, the cost definitely ends up being worth it, because if you go from making $200,000 a year as an associate to making $500,000 to $600,000 a year as an owner, paying $100,000 a year for 10 years towards that practice loan is totally worth it, because not only are you making an additional $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 a year, but you're also going to eventually pay that loan off, and then you have equity in a business. And later, when you want to retire or move, you can sell that business to someone else. So this upfront cost usually is worth it, but it is a risk, because if you decide you don't want to be at that office anymore, then you do have a loan that you are still responsible for. You can't just walk away because you have taken out this loan. And that brings us to risk number 2, leaving your job. As an associate, you can just walk away at any point. If you have a contract, maybe 90 days. I mean, I've seen some contracts where the dentist has agreed to stay on for the rest of the year. Just be very careful about the contracts you sign. I wouldn't assign anything over maybe a 60-day notice. Try to aim for a 30-day notice. I would not do some sort of 90-day. I definitely would not do some sort of contract where you agree to stay for a year or more. Just absolutely stay away from those. You don't need to sign that kind of thing. There are so many jobs you could find that aren't going to require that much commitment. Because that's just the thing. If you are in an associate position, you are trading off for a time convenience for a lower pay. You're going to make less money working at an associate job, because it gives you more flexibility. When you become a practice owner, you are now trading off some of that flexibility for more responsibility. Now, along with that responsibility comes all sorts of benefits, namely much higher pay if you do it right, more freedom over your schedule, more autonomy in being able to do what you want to do and run the office the way you want to run it. But ultimately, you are responsible for that practice loan that you signed and for that office. So if you take over an office, if you want to move, you have to find someone to replace you before you can move. Now, it's not entirely a bad thing, because if you are smart, if you bought the practice for a good deal and you've grown it, you might be able to sell it for significantly more than you paid for it. So you potentially are going to be making a lot of money when you leave, so that's great, but it's going to take longer. Whereas the associate job, you might be able to leave in 30 days. It might take 90, 120, maybe up to a year to leave. If you are in a more rural location where it's harder to find dentists to come in to take over the practice, it can take you a while to sell your practice. On the other hand, if you're in a city or somewhere where there's a lot more demand, you can often sell a lot quicker. Also, if you're going to lower the price, it's going to be easier to find a buyer. If you're going to keep the price higher, it might take a little bit longer. And that'll be up to you to decide on that trade-off. Are you trying to get rid of this practice quickly, or are you trying to price it a little bit more competitively, knowing that it's going to take longer to sell? Mainly what this means is, if you are in a situation where you are likely going to have to move really quickly, I probably wouldn't recommend buying a practice right now. Wait until your life is a little bit more stable and you know you can stay there for at least a few years before taking over a practice. You can take a job, work there a month or two, and then leave. If you buy a practice, you're going to want to stay there at least a few years. ideally 5, 10, or more. Number three is staffing. This one is a risk because you might be in a situation where your staff are incredible. You have no issues. Things are going amazing. You have the best staff, an awesome office manager, office, great assistants, great hygienists. But you could get into a situation where you are unable to find good employees, or maybe you're trapped with some bad eggs. It happens. This is one of the risks of ownership. And at some point in your career, you're going to deal with some staff that aren't very good. Some of the issues you might face with staff are assistants that just don't show up. I had an assistant that in the middle of the day just left. Now, she had an okay reason. It was because her son was in daycare and got sick, and she had to pick her son up from daycare. But she didn't even tell me. I sat down and was waiting for her to show up so I could get started on the procedure, and she just never showed up. And then I went around, walked around the office to look for her. I was like, maybe she's in the bathroom, but no one was in the bathroom. She was nowhere to be seen. And then I just had to get started without having an assistant, which was really rough. And then I found out the next day, she said, oh, sorry, I had to leave because of my son. You didn't tell me? I probably would have let her leave, but like, she didn't even tell me. She didn't stay long after that. I think I had to let her go after these types of things happened a few times. Another thing, while it hasn't personally happened to me, I've seen it happen to a lot of other dentists, is theft. You can have, for instance, an office manager that can literally be stealing money from you, and you might not be aware because you are trusting this person up front to manage your money, and sometimes they just steal. Now, when I was an associate before becoming an owner, I was at a DSO, and the office manager was stealing from the company, which, okay, just, I usually don't give advice on how to steal, but if you are an office manager and you're planning to rob your employer, do it at a private dentist, not at a DSO, because this DSO had probably 100+ accountants that were looking over all these books and all sorts of compliance stuff and regulatory stuff. There was absolutely no way she was going to get away with this. So don't steal in general, but definitely don't steal if you're at a big company. Find some smaller dentist who doesn't know what he's doing and steal from him. When you're the owner of a business, anything that goes wrong, it's on you. If a staff member leaves, it's your responsibility to find someone to replace that staff member. Now, as you grow your office and get more and more systems in place, you might be able to outsource some of the hiring and firing type decisions to your office manager. I know some dentists that they don't even interview their staff. They just have the office manager do the entire thing, and they just show up and there's a new assistant at the office and say, hey, nice to meet you. And that's the first time that they've met their new staff member when they show up for the first day of work, because the office manager did all the work to hire that person. I mean, that's a great system if you can get that in place. But once again, that requires you to find a good office manager. And if you put too much trust in your office manager, we just talked about how sometimes office managers can steal from you if you're not careful. So, I mean, you can figure this out. This is a possible thing. Lots of dentists have figured this out before. However, it is a risk. There are multiple risks involved with staff. They are other people. You can't read their minds. You can't control everything they're going to do. And so you need to go into this understanding there are some risks involved in practice ownership, and the staff that you hire can be one of those risks. Number four is you are responsible if anything breaks. If one of your chairs breaks, you have to pay for an equipment person to come in and fix it. If your autoclave goes out, you're the one who has to buy a new autoclave. If the air conditioner stops working, now, depending on if you're leasing or if you own the building, maybe the landlord might be responsible for that one, but likely you're going to be responsible for getting that air conditioner fixed. Depending on your comfort with using tools and your handiness, maybe you'll do some of these repairs yourself, or maybe you'll just hire a handyman to come in and do all these fixes and repairs for you. It might be a case-by-case basis. Maybe you can fix some things. Maybe you have the handyman fix other things. Now, I actually personally like fixing things and working on equipment, and so I actually did a lot of that myself just because I wanted to. Obviously, from a financial point of view, it probably would have made more sense for me to hire someone to do those things and I focus on seeing more patients. But if you enjoy that, you can do whatever you want. When you're the owner, you are in charge. You get to make those decisions. Just keep in mind though, anything that breaks, it's your responsibility. When you're at an associate job, you just go tell your office manager, you go call whatever support line you have at the DSO. You tell your boss and you say, hey, this thing's broken. You need to get it fixed. And it's their responsibility. When you're the owner, it's your responsibility. Number five, the emotional and mental load. This is something that maybe doesn't get talked enough about. However, being the owner of a practice is more emotionally taxing than working as an associate for the most part. As an owner, you are taking on more responsibility. And as a result, you're going to be more emotionally invested in the outcomes of those decisions. At an associate job, if a patient is leaving, you probably don't really care that much because you're probably going to leave too. So who really cares? But when it's your own office and a patient leaves, they say, I'm not coming back because I wasn't happy with the service. Sometimes it can feel almost a little personal because you've put so much of yourself into this practice. And if a patient is upset, it can be a little bit upsetting. You know, it can be hard to hear patients that are not happy with the service and they have complaints. When they leave negative reviews on Google, honestly, I was lucky that I didn't really have much of this, but I've seen some dentists get some pretty negative reviews. And sometimes there's nothing you can do about it. Sometimes there are just patients who are upset and they're going to be upset no matter where they go. Especially in the first 3 to 6 months of ownership, you're really going to be feeling a lot of this stress, emotional stress. Because you're new to ownership, you don't have a lot of your systems in place. It can be emotionally taxing to be the owner of a business, especially a dental practice, because these patients come in, they're afraid, they're scared. Most people don't even want to be at the dentist when they're there. And then sometimes they take that out on you. I mean, you've experienced this as an associate. Like being an associate can also be super stressful and can be emotionally taxing as well. So I'm not going to say that being an owner is definitely that much different than being an associate. Both have their pros and cons. But I feel like as an owner, that emotional toll is a little bit higher because you feel like this practice is more of your responsibility than your associate job, which it is. The practice is your responsibility. And so emotionally, it's a little heavier. You can feel it. It's a little more challenging. But if you're getting paid 2-3 times as much, it's probably worth the trade-off. Number 6 is going out of business. As an associate, if the practice goes out of business, who cares? You'll just go find another job. But when you're the owner of a practice, if the practice fails and goes out of business, then you're on the line for that. I mean, you're responsible. You're going to have to start spending some of your savings to try to save this practice. If you're unable to save it, well, then you're probably going to have to file bankruptcy. You're not going to be able to get a loan for a significant period of time. It's going to be stressful. Whereas at an associate job, if it goes out of business, who cares? You just go across the street and get another job. Now, the failure rates for dental practices is extremely low. I mean, compared to like starting a restaurant or almost any other type of business, some sort of retail shop, dental practices are extremely low risk, but they do fail. There are failures, and generally failures come as a result of one of two things. Number one, you did a startup. Startups are just way more likely to fail because you don't have patience. If you don't have patients, then you are not going to have income. And if you don't have income, how are you going to pay for your expenses? And if you can't pay for your expenses, you go out of business. But if you buy a practice and you buy the right practice, well, then you're going to have a lot of patients, you're going to have a lot of income, and you're going to easily be able to cover all of your expenses, and you're not going to go out of business. So the second type of failure is if you buy a practice, but you buy one that doesn't have enough patients in order to make enough money in order to cover your expenses. So you absolutely need to make sure that you buy the right practice. There are a lot of issues that can go into buying a wrong practice. A lot of things can go wrong. And so make sure you're getting that practice properly evaluated by a professional who has done this before and understands what to look for. Make sure that you're using a lawyer to make sure that there are no legal considerations that you're not taking into account. Make sure you have an accountant that is looking at all your numbers, a CPA who actually has experience with dental practices before and can tell you what things are potentially wrong with this practice. You need to absolutely make sure that you know everything you can about a practice before you purchase it. If you buy the right practice, it will likely be one of the most profitable decisions that you've ever made in your life. But if you buy the wrong practice, it's going to be one of the biggest headaches that you've ever had. It's going to cause the most stress, and you could potentially go out of business. However, there is something that is worse than going out of business as a dentist. And that brings us to number 7. Risk number 7 is something I call the low income death trap. Banks are incredibly willing to loan money to dentists because they know dentists are almost always able to pay back their debts because they're making enough money at their practice that they're able to pay back those debts. While going out of business is a risk, it's an incredibly small risk compared to risk number 7. Risk number 7 is that you're making enough money to pay your expenses and pay back your loans, but you're not making very much profit. If you're not careful, you can get into a cycle where you're just barely making enough money to cover your expenses, but you're not keeping much for yourself. And because you're not making enough money, you might have a difficult time investing into marketing to get new patients into the door. If you're in a situation where you don't have enough patients at your practice, you're not going to be able to make enough money in order to do any marketing to get new patients into the door. And so you can enter this cycle, not making enough money, all of your money is going to expenses, no money left over for marketing. And so this happens to dentists. They'll go years and years and years, and maybe they're only making $100,000 per year, which you say, well, that's great. But you still have to pay taxes. You still have your student loan payments. After all the expenses in the office, after your taxes, after your student loans, you might only be making $70,000 a year, which is fine. It's enough that you're surviving. You're doing okay. You can afford a small mortgage. You can afford inexpensive groceries, but you're probably not going on any vacations. You're probably not buying the kind of things you want to buy. You're not going to have enough money to buy a new car. But most importantly, you're not going to have any money left over to reinvest into the business. As an associate, if you're at one of these jobs where you're not making very much money, just go find another job. There's tons of other jobs out there. You can find a better job. But if you're the owner of the business and you're trapped at a practice like this, well, it's not so easy to leave because you still have a practice loan, and it's going to be difficult to sell a practice that's not very profitable. No one's going to pay you $700,000 for a dental practice that isn't making any money. I quite routinely get calls and emails from dentists who are saying, hey, I bought a practice, but I'm struggling. I'm not making enough money. Can you help me? But often by the time they reach out to me, they've already made the mistake and they're in some cases already too deep into this. They bought the wrong practice from the beginning. They bought a practice that didn't have enough patients. They bought a practice that wasn't profitable enough. They bought a practice where the expenses were too high. Maybe rent was too high. Maybe payroll was too high. They bought a practice in an area where it was saturated with dentists and they're not getting any new patients. They bought a practice that doesn't have any roadside visibility and there's no patients coming in. They bought the wrong practice. There are so many things that can go into buying a good or a bad practice. And if you're not careful, if you get stuck with the wrong practice, it's like a game of hot potato. The seller just passed along this hot potato to you. But if you're not careful, you can be stuck with it and you might have no one who's willing to take that potato from you. Most dental practices are not worth buying. When you start evaluating practices, chances are you're going to have to look at 10, 15, maybe 20 practices before you find the right one to buy. Especially when you first reach out to practice brokers, they are going to have the practices that no one else has wanted to buy because they're not good practices. And they're going to say, hey, this is a new dentist. He or she doesn't really look like she knows what she's doing. Maybe I can get him or her to buy this practice that no one else has wanted. And so the first practices they're going to show you are going to be the ones that are not worth buying. Now, if you're trying to figure out if a practice is worth buying, I have put together a practice evaluation checklist. You can check it out. It's going to be in the description below. In that checklist, I walk through a lot of the things you should look at when you're first evaluating practices. Buying a practice is amazing, but if you buy the wrong one, it's really, really bad. If you're not willing to invest some money up front to make sure you're doing this right, then I recommend you stay at your associate job. Remember, only about 1 out of 10 dental practices that I've seen on the market are actually worth buying. The other 9 out of 10, you're better just staying at your associate job. And so when I say you should become a practice owner, I'm only saying you should become a practice owner if you buy the right practice. Do not buy the wrong practice. It's really, really going to be hard on you. If you would like some help, I have a service where I help dentists buy dental practices. You can find my information in the description. Please reach out. Please do not do this alone. So those are 7 of the biggest risks that I've seen in practice ownership. I don't want to scare you away from being a practice owner because working as an associate has a lot of its own risk on its own. For one, as an associate, you could get fired or let go at any time. You might not think so, but you could. As an owner, no one can fire you. Maybe a patient could quote unquote fire you, but if they're 1 out of 2,000, you still have 1,999 other patients. So who cares if that patient leaves? But the biggest risk of staying an associate is that you're just making significantly less than you could have been making if you were an owner. You might be making $200,000 to $300,000 less than you could have been making as an owner. And if you do that, over the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years, imagine the amount of money that you could have made. If you had been putting that money into investment accounts, think about how much interest you could have earned on that money that you're just giving up by working as an associate. The older you get and the more responsibilities you have in your life, the more difficult it's going to be to make this transition. Can you buy a dental practice when you have children? Sure. But it's a lot easier if you do it before. The first 6 months are going to be a lot of work, and it's going to be hard. The first 6 months of practice ownership are really hard. It gets better once you start getting your systems in place. But you need to find a time in your life when you're able to devote yourself 100% to the practice for at least 6, maybe 12 months while you get things going. Then, you know, 2 to 3 years in, when all the systems are in place, you have an office manager that's able to, you can outsource a lot of your tasks to. You have an assistant that you trust that's able to do a lot of the back office stuff. Your life starts to become a whole lot easier. You can set your schedule up however you like. You can work 3 days a week if you want. And then you have plenty of time to be at home with your family. The sooner you can become a practice owner, the better. I became a practice owner about 1 year out of school, and I think that is just about perfect for most dentists. If you've already been out of school for longer than a year, it's fine. You can still become an owner at year 4, at year 6, at year 7, but the sooner the better. Remember, every year that you delay, you're missing out on potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars of profit. Not only that, but the sooner you get started, the sooner you're going to have your practice loan paid off. Once your practice loan is paid off, if you're paying $100,000 a year towards a practice loan for 10 years, when that 10th year is over, you're all of a sudden going to have all this money that you're not even going to know what to do with. Not to mention your student loans. If you're making more money, you're going to be able to pay off your student loans quicker. If you are smart, you can get into a position where you have all of your loans paid off by the time you're 35 years old. Now, if you're already 35 and your loans are not paid off, there's no better time to get started. When was the best time to invest in the stock market? Well, 50 years ago, 100 years ago. Think about how much money you'd have now. When's the second best time? Today. Any longer you wait is just going to delay. The sooner you can get started, the better. Keep in mind, there are risks, but as long as you're taking these risks into account, you can have an incredible career as a practice owner.